Hello and welcome to episode number 24 of the At U2 podcast, the official podcast of atu2.com, not the official podcast of u2.com that we're aware of yet. We haven't got the signing, contracts haven't been signed. No, that's not even, I shouldn't even joke. People will think I'm serious. I'm joined this week, this episode, by Sherry. Hello, Sherry.
Hello.
You're speaking to me through a cloud of drugs and haze, just as rock and roll.
It's Bonner. About time I started living the rock and roll dream, you know? A little bit of codeine, a little bit of Mucinex, and a whole lot of flu. It's a great thing.
Hopefully there's no listeners out there who are like me. Whenever I, even just hearing or reading somebody tweeting about them being sick, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, my throat actually, it kind of feels a little gross. And like, you know, I start that sort of, like a little bit of, what's that called, where you're like worried about getting sick all the time. I forget what the official term is.
Hyperchondriac?
Yeah, a little bit of that. Just like a virtual hyperchondriac, maybe. Where I feel like just by reading about it and talking to somebody on Skype, I'm going to get sick. But hopefully that's not the case. Got the virus protection in place. We'll be all good.
I generally don't go around sniffing rock stars.
Which also helps.
If you did, you might catch the Bono flu.
Exactly.
That would not be a good thing, Adam.
Which actually, that's a segue right away here before we can get onto the regular podcast. But
seriously,
it's amazing how I was thinking through the tour, how I know there was, Bono was sick at one point, but not so sick that they had to cancel. Like for four people plus the crew, that a show like that goes on with, for as long as it did without anybody coming down with a serious like show canceling sickness, you know? I mean, we had...
Well, there's some serious medication and some serious protocol that goes into place when something like that happens. I mean, Bono was sick. He just gets this really thick syrupy thing and some hot tea and sworn from talking, which I know is hard.
Yeah.
But I remember for Zoo TV, he was horribly sick in Albany. And the audience did most of the singing that night because he had no voice. And when he came into Hartford, they made comment about that during the show about the poor fans in Albany who got a sick band.
Yeah.
You know, but the show has to go on. So
yeah, exactly. And it's, I mean, short of you know, hospitalized, I guess, or whatever, it's you can't cancel a show with that many people that are involved. And obviously we've seen on the tour, we saw exactly what it takes for a show to be canceled, obviously. And act of God, act of terrorism, act of those kind of things, I guess.
Who do they think they are? Rihanna at the Grammys or something? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, it was a rumor. Hey, she was sick, or maybe, I don't know if it's a rumor.
Oh, no. She apparently had a hissy fit about something and then used a doctor's note to get around it. But the day after, she was found singing and sounding perfectly fine. Wow, so that's the latest on TMZ.
All right. Thanks for that extra segue. we'll talk about Grammys maybe, but before we get to that point, it is just Sherry and I, in case you're waiting for another introduction. If you're hoping for someone else to be on, it's just the two of us. So sorry to disappoint or excite, depending on... Who you
it truly hope. Is a U2 podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I think this was after we recorded last time. Fabiano, a listener of the show, posted an awesome tweet, picture of himself, selfie, listening to this show on it with his desk in the background. So, he has probably, I think he wins so far the award for coolest desk anyways of anybody listening to the show. We've had some folks tweeting back pictures on the train or various places around the world, but his desk is definitely worth checking out. It'll be a link. It'll be in the show notes, of course.
We got South Park. We got Family Guy. We've got Big Bang Theory. We got Muppets. We got The Cleveland Show. Let's see here. What else do we have? Angry Birds. It is Simpsons. It's a great desk.
Yeah. and so that's what the way he's sending that in, and the way you can too, if you're wanting to, is you use the hashtag @U2podcast, @ATU2podcast, and we'll track it down. And just kind of cool to see where folks are in the world when they listen to the show, either live sometimes if you're tuning in live. I think Fabiano is tuned in live right now. But also you can obviously whenever you're listening to the podcast later. So I was joking. I think we should have a trivia thing or a prize for somebody who can name every single character on his desk in his photo. So you'd have to probably use a few tweets to get all the names in, but you can try your best anyways. Where you can find the show notes, if you're curious at all, if this is your first time listening, goodstuff.fm/ATU2/the episode number, which in this case is 24. So anyways, we where are my show notes here? I'm all flustered here trying to checking out Fabiano's desk. You wanted to mention something else that's happening.
Yeah. I was watching PBS the other night, and American Masters had a special episode on B.B. King, The Life of Riley, which was phenomenal. And it's currently available for viewing on the PBS website through, I think it's March 10th. And I think we'll put the direct link in the show notes. But, you know, with it being February 18th, it reminded me that on February 15th of 2005 in Mississippi, it was the proclaimed B.B. King Day, which is pretty cool. So for his home state to celebrate him in such a way after all that he went through in his life, you know, it's a huge loss to no longer have him with us. Bono had made mention that BB was the same age as his father. So when he toured with U2 during the Lovetown tour, you know, it was kind of like having a cooler dad on the road type of thing. But Bono's got a few really good lines in the episode. One where it clearly appears that it's some genius quote that Bono's saying about B.B. King, saying, you know, for true greatness to take place, that requires a long obedience in the same direction. And of course, there's no footnote there to say that that isn't an original quote from Bono. That came from Nietzsche. But what are you going to do? You know, every artist is a cannibal.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So I highly recommend folks check that out.
I'll mention
goes into detail a little bit about the making of When Love Comes to Town too, which is fun.
Oh, nice. It's it definitely does not load for me. It gives me this video is not available in your region due to right restrictions.
No. So it's available in the US. Yeah. However, you can order the DVD if you are interested in purchasing the episode, which if you're a music junkie like I am, it is well worth the investment. It's a great episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And not that you shouldn't buy them. There's, you know, people have ways to, I'll just leave it at that. there was, is there anything else before we get into the inbox that you wanted to mention? Oh, virtual reality stuff.
Mentioned, yeah. So, NME, posted on its blog, let's see here, yesterday, which had been Feb 17, because we're recording on the 18th, don't know when we'll go live or when you're listening to it, but yesterday, about is virtual reality the future of music video, using U2 as the poster child band for the use of virtual reality, which is interesting that it's starting to gain traction within some of the more, if you can call NME a mainstream music publication, but to see it in print in other places, you know, I have written about the whole virtual reality vibe in last month's OTR, and I'm happy to see that other people are feeling the same way. I remember when MTV first came out, that it was a new genre, and they were just looking for content. They would play anything because they needed content. And now that virtual reality is this new genre and they're looking for content, U2 has really positioned themselves beautifully to, hey, you need content, we'll give it to you. And it's getting into the hands and the eyes and the ears of a buying public who, if you can afford virtual reality, you can afford to buy their next album. So
yeah.
I thought that was kind of a neat thing that if NME is now starting to report on it, that maybe it might actually happen in 2016.
Yeah, it's one of those things that if you've been around tech at all and or a nerd back in the day or whatever, or still, I'm still a nerd, but like VR has always been sort of this thing out on the horizon somewhere that's coming, and it never quite lives up to the expectations. And so even now for me, like I hear about it and it's like, okay, yeah, here we go again. Another round of like, we're all going to have goggles and it's going to be this amazing thing. And then you put it on and it's like worse than Pac-Man or whatever. But you saw the bus, I forget what it was called, the Apple YouTube
the,
bus.
The experience tour. Bus. Yeah.
You actually got to experience the VR experience, right? With Matt, I think. And we posted.
Yeah.
The
I got on the bus, but then we also have a Gear VR system that our Samsung phones go in. Not that we're getting paid for product placement. That's what we own.
Samsung, because, call me if you want. We can pay us for product placement.
Because if you're a YouTube fan, you have to have the Edge phone. Right. I mean, not that I'm going to be buying Toyota's U2 car anytime soon. So to be able to experience it on the experience bus, then come home and be able to sit in my rotating office chair and spin around in the privacy of my own home office.
Yeah.
I quite like the privacy aspect of it, but it was funny. My daughter's birthday was last week, and we shared the virtual reality stuff with my mom and my stepfather. My grandmother wouldn't do it, which I was very disappointed, but it lived up to every expectation that it could win a $10,000 award on America's Funniest Home Video. It will not really work with that older generation.
You know what else I don't like?
Yeah.
Okay, Matt. Yeah, we know. No, Matt's been on record as really enjoying it too, and so we won't we won't misquote him or take him out of context there too much. So, yeah, it's definitely and we also got a chance to even if you didn't have a special fancy phone, you could still try it out on your regular phone and sort of move it around and at least experience it a little bit. And so it's exciting to see. I'm still skeptical that as to how this is going to be like an album packaging experience that they're going to send out to everybody, and that because you know like. Some percentage of time that you actually listen to music, you're not sitting in a chair. You might be sitting in a chair because you're working or whatever, but you know, driving the car, et cetera. And so to put all that work into this experience that will be 10% maybe or whatever of the amount of time you listen to the music seems kind of funny, but I mean,
I feel pretty confident that it's going to be released both in audio and in the video.
Right.
And
yeah.
Probably will be released all at the same time with one magic push of a button again, probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to what they were saying back when Songs of Innocence first came out, that they want the next release, which would be this one, to give the. A new perspective on liner notes for you to have album art in a new way to, and of course if it's songs of experience,
yeah, no better.
You know, they want you to experience what their vision is behind the song. Now, all that I can hope is it's not like the Films of Innocence where all of a sudden I'm wearing this VR gear and I have a crap load of wolves coming after me. You know, because then it might have to be sponsored by Depends.
Right. Well, there is, Bono is still involved, I think, through Elevation Partners or something. There's some video game company that I think that he was involved with. So maybe they'll tie that back in and recoup some of those costs and put out the U2 songs or video game of experience, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
What I would love for them to do is to, and I don't know how the technology would allow them to do it, but for them to release U2 3D in VR.
Yeah.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a funny joke that went around Twitter. I'm sure if you've paid attention at all to some of the stuff with the iPhone and the FBI in the States, and a tweet that went around saying if the FBI wants to get onto everybody's phone, why don't they just contact somebody like you two who've already done that, managed to get onto everybody's phone, no problems. Anyway.
Well, there are a lot of Irish policemen, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We'll move on to the inbox. We have a few questions. So if you want to submit questions or comments, whatever, for the show, hashtag ask at you two is where you can send that in, and we'll try and grab that and crab that? Did I say catch that, grab that, and use it on a future show? So first up is at Rohod67 asks, have you heard the cover of A Sort of Homecoming by Till December? Do you have a fave U2 cover? And I have definitely heard it. They officially released the video for this, I think, a couple weeks ago. I forget when it happened exactly, but it's worth checking out. I tweeted something to the effect of, like, A Sort of Homecoming is as a musician anyway, as a guitar player, is like the song that you don't really want to try because it's just kind of one of those U2 songs to me that I don't really want to touch and destroy, but they do such a great job of it. I tweeted enthusiastically and shared it all over the place, trying to get more views for them. They're a band out of Scotland, I believe. And yeah, I think they did a great job of that. It's a interesting sort of slowed down ish kind of version of the song, but, yeah, well, we'll put out a link in the show notes. You guys can check it out. I don't want to play it here because we don't want to risk any sort of licensing sewage, suing sewage, I guess. That's not what I meant.
Well, you know, we don't want the crap to start flowing.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You know, that, I think it works both ways there, Chris.
But yeah, how about you? What's your, I guess, have you heard that? And then what do you have a fave?
Yeah, they did a beautiful job with that. My fave U2 cover is The Fly, but done by two different acts. One is Gavin Friday, because I just love that,
yeah,
that
that's
version
a good one.
Of it. But a band called the Joshua Trio also did it. And they did it like a country number, which is really, really clever. They released it on a cassette single back in the early 90s in limited quantity. They did, and then the B-side was like a spaghetti western version of Where the Streets Have No Name.
Right, yeah.
But that was an outfit out of Dublin. I believe they were even featured in Propaganda. So those are my two favorite covers of the same song.
We'll see if I'm just trying to load it, because I have the YouTube video linked in the show notes, and it says you can download an MP3 of this from their blog, townfulloflosers.com, but it looks like that's another URL that doesn't work anymore, unfortunately. So it may not be available, but you can definitely hear. I won't play it again just for reasons, but
I'm sure if you go to YouTube.
Yeah, it plays off YouTube.
I mean, they've got everything on YouTube.
Yeah. I want to say I was just pulling it up. The album, actually that same album, the Achtung Baby. I don't know how we say it out loud, but.
From Q.
Yeah, is that who put it out or whatever? But yeah, why? You know what? I hate iTunes. I'm just going to say that right now. I just want to see the album. Sorry, that's a little bit of Apple complaining on the show. The Jack White's cover of Love is Blindness on there, I kind of like, which everybody doesn't love. I know it's not everybody's favorite, but I really like his version of that. And then also, like, there's 101 versions of One out there. But I'm sure there's some really bad ones. I haven't heard any really, really bad ones. I don't get tired of hearing different people's interpretations of that. And actually also Ultraviolet. I don't really love the Killers version of it on that album, but any other more acoustic-y, you know, sort of just different spin on that song.
Although really the Ben Stiller Show take on One with the Lucky Clovers.
Oh, I don't remember if I saw that one.
I'm rather fond of that.
Yeah.
Once again, you can find it on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm sure everything. Oh, they've even got, wait a second. We might have just had an interesting tie-in. Because I'm just watching on YouTube here. He's in the Fly gear. It's from 2006. So it predates the Songs of Experience or the Innocence and Experience tour. But what's swinging above his head?
Yeah.
It's a light bulb.
Yeah, it's the light bulb. Yeah. Yeah, from the Rockumentary.
Yeah. That's awesome. Anyways, we'll before I get sucked down the YouTube rabbit trail, I'll turn that off.
The days before Blue Steel and Maverick.
Yeah, exactly. At New Wave Dame asks, any news on that HBO documentary? Did I miss something? Sherry, any news?
Didn't miss anything. No. you figure that they've got almost a full year plus of footage, especially seeing as they were interviewing Bono after the bike accident. So that would have been, you know, November, December of 2014. So you figure that they're still editing it down, and then the band's got to watch it, then comment on it, and then trash it, and then they have to start all over again because they're perfectionists. It's my theory, and I've put it out there to people who might be in the know who could shed some light on it. But it's my theory that we'll probably see it around the time when their next campaign begins for the new album, potential tour dates and stuff like that, to have that as a content piece to generate enthusiasm. HBO is still on as the producer for it, along with and Davis Guggenheim is still attached to it. So I'm sure that it's just a matter of time before we end up seeing it. I thought it was pretty interesting when it was first announced in July that the documentary would air the week before the Paris show, and of course that announcement came out before the Ireland dates were announced. So how can you do a documentary about, you know, wanting to go home and not include going home, you know, that especially when it's called U2 Finding Home, it would seem like it's missing something like home.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that we'll perhaps see it by the end of the year. But if I find out anything different, I will notify everybody accordingly.
Yeah, there's a little site called @u2.com. You can be sure we'll be trumpeting it loud and proud, I guess, when when we hear something.
Yeah, it might end up in bits and bytes or something.
Next up, Fabiano Nomad. I was trying to think of, I've butchered his name many times on the show, so I was trying to think of a third or fourth or fifth or sixth way, but I just thought I'd play it straight this time. Ask, what is the best from a U2 song? Pride, Sunday Bloody Sunday, Vertigo, Unknown Caller. I'll just say mine quickly that came to me when I was thinking about the answer to this, and I'd have to go back and listen to shows and stuff, but just off the top of what the intro to the last tour of The Miracle of Joey Ramone, just the way that it sort of starts off the show, to me still gives me a little bit of chills thinking about it. It's not the most like emotional deep impact because it's just like the show has just begun, but just the Bono's way of, and U2's way of involving the audience with such a fairly simple lyric, obviously, but as is a great way, I think, to sort of get right off the bat of the show to say, hey, you're part of this with us here. We're not just singing at you. You're going to sing along kind of thing. So how about you, Sherry?
Well, I think the ladies will agree with me when I say Mysterious Ways.
And I'm picturing the song live anyways or whatever.
Well, I'm not going sing it in.
I was trying to bait you into singing.
No. I may be heavily medicated, but I'm not stupid. But it is interesting though that it seems like Bono gravitates to the O vowel when it comes to the songs. I guess you've got the ease of saying it, but you know, thinking through that there are so many songs that you can turn to with that particular sound in order to get the entire crowd into the tune. You know, when Bono spoke to a small group of people, which I was lucky enough to be a part of for the Times Talks in New York City in 2003, during audience Q&A, I actually asked him about that, about the difference between lyricists and poets, and then also about the what the difference is with the musicality. And so in the @U2 article, I had written that his answer was quite thorough, touching upon the issue of rhythm. He said that lyric writing incorporates rhythm from other musicians and that there is great care in making the words match what the music is telling it. Poetry cannot be put to music half the time. You can write vainly, oh, this is a good line, but it wouldn't be good for the music, he said, describing the difference. Then he explained that his lyric writing styles to hold on to the vowel sounds for added power. You know, like in the name of love. It's like that. He described, he said that on earlier albums, he sounded like a girl when trying to hold on to notes in the early days. And he said, that's why I started smoking cigars and putting my voice through reverb and other things to try to make it sound better. So you know, you think about that vowel sound and what he's looking for is singing power. So I don't know if the vowel sound is the singer's Napoleonic complex or something.
Yeah, but it definitely makes sense. Once you, in hindsight, you sort of think about it, obviously it is kind of easy to sing along to, and even if you're not a singer at all, to sort of grab that vowel sound and shout it out at the top of your drunken lungs or medicated lungs, whichever the case may be.
Or both.
Or both, exactly.
If you're not following doctor's orders, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So cool. That's the end. We'll close the mailbag, the inbox for now. Like I said, if you want to send in questions or comments for the show, use hashtag AskAtU2 on the Twitter, and we'll grab that and use it in a future show. Anything and anything is fair game as far as what you want to bring up or topic or question or whatever about AtU2.com itself. If there's questions you have about that, or just obviously the band and anything that relates to it and our thoughts, comments, stuff. How do I get out of this? Let's go on to the round table, which isn't as quite as round. It's more of just a square table because there's the two of us. But Sherry, you had an interesting little article appear on an interesting little website called U2.com.
I've got because of the amazing lack of money that we get paid over at U2, I needed to freelance for, again, an amazing lack of money because you don't get paid for this stuff either. I was asked a few months ago to contribute a playlist to U2.com, which was amazing because up to that point, there were only 15 people who, over the course of, I think, 11 years, who had been asked to participate in such a way. Matt McGee is one individual who was asked to participate several years ago, which was kind of neat. Mm-hmm. So in researching what the other playlists were like, I didn't really want to copy anybody. But at the same time, I thought about it in terms of the Innocence and Experience tour, with there being a narrative, and that, you know, there was, if the band was putting themselves out there and telling their story, I felt that this would be a great opportunity to put myself out there and explain my fan story from the beginning of my U2 fandom all the way up to today, using the playlist as the vehicle to do that. And it was incredibly gratifying to put it out there, knowing that I put a lot of personal stuff into it, and to have so many people respond back with a lot of positivity and thanks for putting into words what I can't describe type of thing. So that meant a great deal to me, you know, just being Joe Average Soccer Mom fan, you know, but at the same time, having the band make such an impression on my life that it's shaped me from a very tender age to the person that I am now. There really isn't an aspect of my life from age 16 on that U2 hasn't been a part of. So I hope that came across in the article. And it is a subscriber only piece. Being a supporter of the fan club and being a paid subscriber to the fan club, I'm happy that it is behind the paywall, so that it is something special for the subscriber. So I don't know if, you know, at a later time down the line, we'll republish it on at. I know that Matt would like that to happen, but you know, this is special for the band. They asked me to do it through their people. It wasn't like Larry, you know, cornered me behind a building and said, oh, okay, punk, you're going to write this for me and I'm not going to pay you a damn cent, you know.
I've done something again.
Well, it's worth mentioning, I guess. We won't reveal all the whole playlist or anything, but there's definitely some interesting cuts on there that I noticed too that sort of stuck out as, for me anyways, personally, are some of my favorite U2 songs. And this isn't necessarily, like you said, isn't like your top 10 favorite songs, but it's sort of like your journey as a fan or becoming a fan and then, you know, obviously as a fan. But particularly for me, North and South of the River has always been one of my favorite U2 songs that obviously doesn't really get played a lot or heard a lot, but that one, and then also Falling at Your Feet was the other one too, which I've loved too on from the Million Dollar Hotel soundtrack.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the deeper cuts because that's where their artistry lies. You know, I see the stuff that gets played on the radio as the invitation in, but it's getting deeper into the discography where you get to realize the artists that are U2 and not just the commercial artists. This is the artistry that they're presenting to us. So, you know, there's been in fan circles for quite a long time, questions about why, when the Joshua Tree remaster came out, that would have been a perfect opportunity to put the Little Orphan song Wild Irish Rose on there as like an Easter egg or something along those lines, because that was something that was done for the Sound and Vision Influence of Irish Music, which was then renamed Bringing It All Back Home, which was broadcast in Ireland, but also on PBS long, long time ago. And it's a beautiful song. But you know, it's been orphaned in the U2 catalog. And so I wanted it to be acknowledged as being a vital piece to that discography. So for the folks behind the scenes at U2.com to not only, agree with me, but to go the next step and actually provide the audio of the song, which you know, they haven't really acknowledged before. Felt like this was a good opportunity for me to introduce different tracks to the U2 fan base who may not be familiar with these types of tracks.
Yeah, and it's interesting just that you said that. I was just looking at the list, and they do have like YouTube embeds for some of them, and particularly that one, and then U2 or She's a Mystery to Me, which is funny in a way because they both are not like from any sort of official U2 YouTube account and would generally be fall into the range of like songs that would get or videos that would get pulled from YouTube fairly quickly because they don't, you know, you're not the licensed owner, so get it off, or else U2 would, you know, a band or whatever would claim license and then sell their album, you know, linked from the video or whatever. So it's kind of this weird, you know, and I know it's just,
well, they must have had to have gotten permission from I mean, for She's a Mystery to Me, that was written by,
yes, Roy Orbison,
but it was performed by Orbison.
Yeah, before, yeah.
So the video that they used is from the Brooklyn Bridge the promotional concert that they did for How to Dismantle Atomic Bomb. And further down, I reference Nancy Griffith, the folk artist, with a song called "This Heart" off the album Flyer, because you know U2 has collaborated with so many different artists in so many different ways. My friend Lisa, who lives about an hour north of me, she put together this compilation called A Busman's Holiday, with a lot of help from a few other friends in the Boston area, of nothing but the band's collaborations. And so listening through to how U2 sound has ebbed and flowed and changed. You can tell the little hints of what they picked up on in different recording sessions with the different artists that they've worked with.
Yeah, that's where I think it's funny, like, and maybe that's why they linked to those particular YouTube videos, because they don't have them anywhere online, and so U2 themselves doesn't have to, like, this in this case, like the Wild Irish Rose is posted by Jan Klopp in 2013, whoever he or she might be, and there is a standard YouTube license on it. Anyway, it's just curious, interesting thing as far as licensing yeah. and stuff, because I know I've posted many videos on YouTube in various forms with various things, and I posted one the other day that was like within minutes I got a license notice because it had like a 30-second clip of not U2 song, but a song that was in iTunes, and so I either could refuse it and pull it down, or they'd slap the link to iTunes and other places to buy the music, and then I could keep using it or whatever. So just curious. It's just fun. I wonder sometimes how those discussions happen behind the scenes, or probably don't in this case. It just was, you know, they just posted it, and maybe somebody, some licensing person will listen. This will be the one episode they listen to, and they're like, maybe I should look into
that. Well, no.
Sorry if we get anybody in trouble.
I think that the team behind the scenes, because I had submitted this to them back in November, and it finally got posted, you know, about a week or so ago. Mm-hmm. So I think that they did go through and get formal permissions from the Orbison estate, from Griffin's people, in order to put it up there, so that, because I mean, this is behind a paywall, so people are paying for access to these particular tracks. So I'm sure that they had to get granted special permissions, but then again, members of the band performed on those tracks, so I'm sure that that there weren't too many hula hoops for them to jump through.
Yeah, no, exactly. All right. Yeah, no, it's a great list, and like we said,
but it was an absolute honor to be able to write it. I'm still floored that it actually happened, and you know, the picture. I wish they would have cropped it better, because it kind of looks like I'm like a creepy voyeur just poking over the ledge, although it does indeed show just how damn short I am.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'll testify to anybody who isn't a paid member that you can actually see Sherry's full face in the actual posting. It's not just that they didn't have enough frame in the camera to go low enough to fit Sherry in.
But I've got my YouTube handprint lithograph in the background. I got my I Love the Dalton Brothers bumper sticker. Yeah. I've got my 3-inch squeaky nun, my autographed foam lemon, picture of Bono holding up an MIT hat from when he dropped in to meet with the MIT Poverty Lab while I was working at MIT, and I have a few other little gems in the background as well, just to show off my geeky fandom. Not as good as Fabiano's desk, mind you, but you know, I got to represent somehow.
Yeah, no, it's good. And for anybody who's like, I'm just a recent paid subscriber. Thanks to a special friend who's out there, if you're listening. But you do get to go back to previous years' posts and stuff. Like you mentioned, they've been doing this for a while. Like Matt McGee's posts, that's from a while ago. Other people, Willie Williams. I had the list, but I can't find it now. But
Knife Lee.
Yeah.
Neil Story's in there. Olaf Tyrannison from Hot Press. You've got Kathy Gilfillan, who is also known as Mrs. Paul McGinnis. She's in there, and a few other industry insiders. You've got Catherine Owens, John Noble, also known as Big Wave, did one. So, you know, you've got a nice mix of industry insiders, you've got fans, you've got music journalists. And so, you know, I'm in very, very esteemed company. Even, Fernanda, Bocchini, did one as well a few years ago. So, you know, I don't have those types of stories where, and when Bono was at my birthday party and he whispered the song in my ear and it was really special. I don't have anything like that, but I did my best.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And that's, Caroline from U2log.com. She's in there from a few years ago before she had her U2 epiphany or revival. I don't know what you'd call it, but
or a plain old common sense. Like, I got to step away for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All the pay and glory that you get from running a YouTube fan site just became too much, I think.
Now, she put in a lot of effort with U2Log, and I am forever grateful to everything that she provided to the fan community for all those years and continues to do.
Yeah, exactly. And that's I don't think I would be involved with at U2.com if it wasn't for Caroline getting me hooked up with helping her out. I would have been like,
we got to get Von B on one.
I know we
podcasts,
will,
sir.
We definitely will. She's on my list, and actually, we'll send thoughts, prayers, etc. to her. I know she's dealing with some stuff right now, and just send thoughts out to her. But yeah, we'll wrap up the show. We'll be back. We're doing it every couple of weeks. If you haven't figured it out, it isn't sort of random. It is every couple of weeks right now, just when the band is off and not doing quite as much. And so obviously if things change, then our schedules will probably change as well. But that's why we're sort of going every couple of weeks right now. As far as our live recordings, typically we do that Wednesdays or Thursdays. We'll post to the At U2 Twitter account, of course. You can follow Sherry at U2Com360, right? No.
No.
You say it probably. It's probably better than me destroying.
Yeah, right now.
Drugs.u2.
Sorry. Cut. At U2Com Sherry.
There we go.
Oh, you got me all choked up, Chris.
Yeah. It's my thing. It's my shtick to butcher people's Twitter names on yours, so I can't not do that to yours as well. But yeah, at U2 is where you can follow the at U2.com site on Twitter, which we'll be posting obviously when we're recording live, and you can listen in, join in the chat room as this afternoon when we're recording. There's just a couple of folks because it's not our usual time. We often record Wednesday evenings, which is a little more fun, lively. Also, you can follow along on Facebook, facebook.com/ATU2com if Facebook is more your speed. And like I said, hashtag ask at U2 is where you can send comments, questions.
And I think that the next podcast, we may be ready to talk about the big U2 fan survey.
Oh, sweet.
We may be ready to unleash the Kraken on that one. So that's a little preview of a coming attraction.
All right. And if you want to listen to back episodes past the deep catalog cuts of the U2 podcast, you can do that at goodstuff.fm/ATU2. All previous 23 episodes are there. We're in iTunes. If you feel like leaving a rating or review in iTunes, it helps get the word out about the show to other listeners on there. Or your podcast player of choice might have a favorite or a share button. That all that kind of stuff helps just get the word out and get other fans aware of the show, which is kind of what we want to do. So in the meantime, I guess, Sherry, we'll wrap it up for now, and we'll see who's back next week. We might have a full round table next week, but we'll see. Hope.
Or in 2 weeks.
Is that 2 weeks? Yeah, sorry. Uh-oh, I might be getting sick. Better cut it off. Okay, folks, thanks for listening. Talk to you again next time. Bye.